This coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and the privilege of reading Parshas Vayera. And of course, Moshe Rabbeinu is reintroduced to us at the beginning of the Parsha. We are told in the context, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe v'el Aharon, Vayitzavim el b'nei Yisrael v'el paro melech Mitzrayim, Lotzias b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. He commanded them to b'nei Yisrael. And we don't find out what the command was all about. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually command Moshe and Aaron to do to B'nai Yisrael? To tell Paro to take them out of Mitzrayim, that I get. But what was the purpose in telling them to B'nai Yisrael? So Rabbi Bernard Weinberger, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the great author of the Shemin Atov, he explains that if Moshe was going to speak on their behalf to Paro, then Moshe Rabbeinu needed their acceptance of his leadership and his representative status. And thus, they would need to accept Moshe. And that's the intent of the pasuk here. But Hashem commands Moshe and Aaron to be representatives of B'nai Yisrael. Vayitzavim el B'nai Yisrael. And then to go to Paro Melech Mitzrayim. It's like Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal used to say, I believe this is a Torah I've heard from Mor Rabbi Rav Shechter, that is the role of Baruch Hu. When we say Baruch Hu es Hashem Mamvorach, and the Tzibur responds, Baruch Hashem Mamvorach, Li'olam Voed, then what's happening at that moment in time is that the Tzibur is accepting the role of the Shliach Tzibur of the Chazan, and therefore it can count on their behalf as a Tfilas HaTzibur, and he would then be the Shlichus, doing the agency of the Tzibur, hence the title Shliach Tzibur. So again, Vayitzavim el B'nei Yisrael, he commanded them to go to B'nai Yisrael and become the representatives, Lotzia Meretz Mitzrayim. Today we have so many exciting people who think they are the rabbi of all of America, the rabbi of the Jewish people. These are crazy titles. Nobody asked them. And so therefore they don't have that representative status. Then we are told the next context, we're told, Leichel Paro Baboker Hinei Yotzei HaMaima. Moshe Rabbeinu was told to go to Paro in the morning because he was going out to the water. And Rashi reminds us that Paro would go to the water early each morning to relieve himself because he started the claim that he was a god, and he didn't need to use the facilities because gods aren't supposed to use the facilities. So Rav Reuven Melamed, one of the great Balei Mutzar Zatzal, pointed out the irony of Paro. On the one hand, here he was, the wealthiest man in the world, with the greatest honor, with the whole world being slaves to him, and still he wasn't able to do as he pleased due to the aura that he created for himself. In essence, says Rav Melamed, he was enslaved as well as the people were enslaved, because he created an image in order to lead the people. He was enslaved to his image just like they were. Rav Melamed explains that that's an incredible lesson for anyone enslaved to any sort of taiva. Think of the wealthy who lose their lives. They're addicted to fame. And then they have to engage in all sorts of crazy things in order to be able to keep their fame high. You know, it's incredible. You think about the paparazzi, right? What we do because we have some sort of status, and so we have to fight the paparazzi in order to have the paparazzi in our lives. It becomes like this ridiculous cycle. Hollywood is just an incredible example of Rav Malamed says that which we tend to be interested in pursuing often becomes that which is no longer interested in what we're pursuing, but rather it becomes all-consuming. It becomes all-consuming of us and our lives in the process. And this has been the case since Paro Melech Mitzrayim. So after the initial two makos, we find the third maka, and that is the maka of Kinim. And it's the third of seven in our parsha, 10 obviously in total. And we're told that the Chartumei Mitzrayim were supposed to lahotzi es hakinim v'lo yacholu. They tried to produce the kinim, they could not. So, you know, just honestly, why was the third maka kinim? And why was Yaakov so afraid of it? If you remember in Parshas Vayechi, Rashi had cited the fact that one of the reasons Yaakov asked Al Nasik Bireini B'Mitzrayim was because of the fact that he didn't want to be there when the Afar Aretz would turn into the kinim. I heard a nice thought from an old family friend, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, Rav Eitan Feiner Shalita, who suggested that after Paro, the next ruling class in Egypt was the class of the priests and the Chartumim, the magicians. And now, the Avodah Zarah protocol in Mitzrayim demanded that not only they, but also their animals, they needed to be hairless. And this was the case in order to prevent lice from being on them as they served Avodah Zarah. If you have lice all over you as you're trying to serve Avodah Zarah, it looks sort of bad. It looks like you have no control over anything. And so therefore, the challenge of the kingdom from Hashem to the Egyptians was that Hashem was cutting them off from their status. Look, here they were, they kept themselves hairless to have no lice, right? And it would look bad. And Hashem cut them from the status. Not only would they be made to suffer, they wouldn't be able to do anything about it, because when you're covered in kinim, you're not allowed to serve. It's against the rules of the Avodah Zarah. And so then they would turn around and they would look, and they would see that Yaakov Avinu would be, his body would be free of lice. And so Yaakov Avinu recognized this and realized that the Egyptians would likely then, in order to explain the phenomenon, they would turn Yaakov Avinu into an Avodah Zarah posthumously. This Yaakov couldn't stand, and so therefore he said, Al-Nosek Pireini B'Mitzrayim. Again, in short, Rabbi Feiner was suggesting that the Kinim, as a Makkah, right, was an attack on the Avodah Zarah status, and Yaakov wanted nothing to do with anything that could give rise to the understanding that he, too, would be part of the Avodah Zarah. And so, therefore, he wanted out. So, of course, we find later on, Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayetze Moshe, Meim Paro, Vayetar El Hashem. Moshe Rabbeinu leaves Paro, and he davens to Hashem. And Rashi explains that he went the extra mile for tefillah. Right? He went more than that. And so Rav Shimon Schwab asked the question, why does he go the extra mile? Why does he daven to Hashem? Why isn't it better not to daven? Let Paro and the people be punished. Right? If Paro would just be on the Midas Adin, he would be found to be a terrible person, but Esau would get out on their own. So why does Moshe daven on the behalf of the Egyptians? And Rav Shimon Schwab said, Tzal answers that Bnei Yisrael recognized as a Goy Gadol, as the Gemara in Megillah and Daf Chav Zayin Amar Aleph explains, because we call out to Hashem. That's why we are Mi Goy Gadol, or because we study Hashem's Torah. That's what makes us a Goy Gadol. And so Moshe Rabbeinu chooses to daven extra hard, because when the Egyptians see the Koach HaTfila of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe will create a Kiddush Hashem, and then Bnei Yisrael would know to appreciate then the Egyptians would know to appreciate Bnei Yisrael for this power of the power of prayer and the power of Limud HaTorah. We are indeed HaKol Kol Yaakov. We do have that ability to have that power, and we have that responsibility to realize that that is our greatest strength. Anyway, and then we figure out that in the middle of the Makkah of Dever, Paro gets the following message. Hinei lo meis mimiknei Yisrael ad echad. That later on, in Parak Tes, we find that when the Makkah of Dever, the fifth Makkah, is identified, we realize that the Jewish animals, only one of the Jewish animals died. It almost sounds like one died. Yet earlier, the Pasuk says that in as far as Makkah of Dever was concerned, no animal of the Jewish people had died. So which version is correct? So the Vilna Gaon, of course, explains that the sheep of the Megadev did die. Right? One of the sheep of the Megadev did die. But prior to Matan Torah, his Jewish status was determined based on patrilineal descent. So in other words, his father was an Egyptian. His mother was Shlomis Bas Divri. His sheep died. One sheep of his Shepsel died. And so the Gra explains that, look, you know, Paro assumes, look, Jewish people, mother's Jewish, must be it's an issue. Right? The Jewish people said prior to Matan Torah, patrilineal descent. His father was an Egyptian, and so ergo, the sheep dying that died was that of a sheep of a non-Jew. And so the only thing was, Paro didn't realize this, and that's why Paro didn't let the Jews go. So Rav Gedalia Eisman Zatzal, the Menal Ruchni of Kol Torah, Rav Shlomo Zalman's Yeshiva, he explains that this is an incredible lesson in human nature. Listen to the trouble that Grug goes in order to be able to understand Paro. Paro doesn't bother to seek an alternative explanation for an abnormality, because he didn't want to accept the possibility that Hashem was correct. Despite the fact seeing the entire Egyptian flock die. Take a look at the lesson in the Yetzirah belief system. One possible Jewish sheep dies. Not one guy's entire crowd. And Paro doesn't care. He walks away in that regard. Okay, and then we come to the Makkah of Barad, the last one in our Pasha. And Moshe Rabbeinu declares, Ketzesi Asayir Efros Ka Eskapay El Hashem. When I leave the city, that's when I'm going to spread my hands up to Hashem. And Shlomo Melech also uses that style of tefillah, spreading his hands up to Hashem, when he dedicates the Beis HaMikdash. So why don't we daven with our hands spread today? So Rabbi Kiveger points out that we have set positions for tefillah, and why we don't spread out our hands? Rabbi Kiveger says that's one of the things that the Christians corrupted from us. And a similar concept exists in the name of the Vilna Gaon, who pointed out that at the beginning of Yishayo, there are two types of priests, kapayim, that are identified. So the Gra explains that there is a parishchem kapechem with your hands, with the palms upwards in the form of a receiver, and then there is precious kapayim downward. Now, if one were to duchen and couldn't hold his hands out, right? So Rav Shechta quoted the name of Rav Soloveitchik, that he would not be yotzei, since to give a bracha, a person needs to hold his hands out on his own. So if a person wants to daven, and he's going to stick his hands through, and he wants to duchen, and he's going to stick his hands through rings in order to be able to hold his hands up with it out with the downward angle, he wouldn't be yotzei, right? Because again, the understanding is priestess kapayim upwards with the palms up in the air. That's the way the Christians daven. Priestess kapayim downward, obviously the Kohanim are allowed to go ahead and proceed that way. Rav Shechta would also point out to us there are a number of instances where the Christians corrupted the intent, and therefore Chazal decided to make changes from a style that's used in Tanakh. Here, priestess kapayim means two different things based on the position of the hands, up or down. The downward position, that's acceptable to us, but the upward position with our hands up in the air, that's something we don't use anymore. It's not an accepted system, and it's something we just don't do. Then we're told that even in the Makav Bara, the wheat nispelt ha-chitav ha-sauronukasa, I'm sorry, ha-pishtav ha-sauronukasa, but ha-chitav ha-kusemes lo-nuku, the wheat and the spelt were not destroyed, ki afilos heina, because they were afilos. We assume that that means that, as Rashi says, these crops are late, and thus they were still young, and they were soft enough to be able to withstand the storm that is known as Makas Barad, right? And the Medrash Tanchuma argues with this idea, maintaining that the word afilos doesn't come from the word late. It comes from the words ploy ployim, that they were wondrous, and that it was wondrous that these crops were able to survive. So why does the Medrash challenge Rashi's explanation that the Pshat is supported throughout Shas? We find the word constantly, the word afileos and afelim, right? And there it also means late. So why does the Medrash challenge that example? And why do we say ploy ployim? Why don't you say that it was a pella? So Rav Avigdor Neben Sal Shalita explains that the entirety of Makas Barad was a miracle. It involved a challenge to nature and the Barad itself. Fire and ice and hail at the same time is an additional amazing thing. That the late crops were not destroyed at the same time that the destruction was happening in the most miraculous way, that makes it ploy ployim. We have constant ploy ployim, right? And so therefore, since we have all sorts of miracles all going on, at the same time, we highlight all of them. And that's what the Medrash wants us to understand. It's not just a question of lateness. Even within the Makkah, there are Pla'im and Pla'i-Pla'im. Finally, in the Haftorah, we read a whole bunch of exciting ideas. And Yechezkel HaNavi declares, "Bikapsius b'espace Yisrael min ha'amam asher nafotsu ubam, v'nektash libam l'einei ha'goyim. When I gather Bnei Yisrael from among the nations, and my name will be sanctified from among them." So Rav Dov Lior Shalita used this pasuk to explain the Kiddush Hashem of the Medina, despite some of its shortcomings. The Navi, in the Haftorah, explains that the settlement of Eretz Yisrael, the planting of the vineyards, and not to Kramim, the building of the homes, all of those things will happen, Bikapsius Bnei Yisrael, and each one is going to be B'nikdashti. The Navi explains that the settlement of the lands and the infrastructure, but you'll notice there's no discussion of doing mitzvos and learning in yeshivas. Why not? So Rav Lior cited the Chafetz Chaim, who noted that initially at the time of the early stages of the Geula, the land is going to need infrastructure first. Thereafter, a larger group will come, and a greater stress on shmiras hamitzvos will come with it. And so Rav Lior noted, this is what seems to be happening to us in the Medina, in Eretz Yisrael today. And halavai, we should be zocher to move on to the continued steps until the Geula Shlema. And that's really the message of the Haftorah, that we should be able to move on to get to those continued steps until we get to the Geula Shlema and beyond. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu get us there, and these weeks of Geula that we concentrate there, and may we get there b'mheira v'yameinu. Shabbat Shalom to all.